Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
It's the Mitchin Podcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to the Mitchin. My name is Andrew Levins, and this is a food podcast that we host every week from Sydney. It's all about food and restaurants and chefs and people who eat at restaurants.
And whinging and complaining.
Hey, who are you?
You introduce me.
Okay.
That's your job. All right.
That's my job. My unpaid job. joining me this week, and, you know, he took a week off, so apologies for not doing an episode last week. It was because one of us got to travel to Mexico and Los Angeles, and the other one could not be fucked being the one that created content when I wasn't the one eating at new restaurants every second that I was on holiday. The person who went overseas to Mexico and LA was my co-host every single week, Mitch Orr.
Thanks, bro. To be fair, I feel like I deserve it more than you do.
Really?
Yeah.
Deserve what?
Just to go and eat new restaurants and
you
stuff.
Eat all the time. I've not been eating these last 3 months because I've been dieting. I deserve it.
You deserve a cheat holiday.
Yeah, sure. So on today's episode, it's going to be pretty simple. We're going to walk. Mitch is going to walk us through his trip, make us feel jealous of all the incredible food he ate. The biggest kind of main reason you went over to Mexico was mm-hmm. to eat at Noma.
Correct.
If you are a fan of what Noma do, well, I guess Mitch is going to walk you through what he can remember of that meal and where it stacks up.
You can't not have seen it if you like food on Instagram. Like pretty much every big name foodie in the world has been. So
what if you're blind?
Well, then you don't have Instagram, do you?
I mean, what if you just want to...
I specifically said if you have Instagram.
I'm sure there is like a Braille-based Instagram.
That would be amazing.
Someone make that. Some tech bros listening, make a Braille-based Instagram. We're also going to be checking the email bag. There's a few emails from listeners, so we'll do that at the end of the episode. But Los Angeles, Mitch.
Los Angeles.
Do we do Noma first? Do we get that out of the way or do we make them wait?
Let's go through it.
Okay.
Because, the trip sort of went in order of...
All right.
You know, we started in LA.
Wait. You got a plane.
We got a plane.
How did you get to the airport?
I got an Uber.
Uh-huh.
Yep, Uber.
How many stars did you give the driver?
I can't remember. I think 5. It was fucking early. I think it was like 6 a.m. or something. We flew premium economy, which was very nice.
It is a little like that little bit of extra flair.
Yeah, it makes a big difference, man, on a long flight. It really does. But, you know, anyway. And then, so we landed in LA at stupid o'clock in the morning, and then got a car to Louis' house and woke Louis up.
So this is Louis Tikaram, who's been on the podcast a couple times in the past. Used to be a Sydney-based chef, was the head chef at Long Grain for a few years, yep. Won the Josephine Pignolet
yep.
Young Chef of the Year a couple years ago, yep. And then packed up and moved to LA and is now... he's now the king of LA, and
basically
he runs a restaurant called
EPLP,
where he kind of brings the Thai food that he was known for in Sydney to LA.
Yeah, it's like a Southeast Asian eatery kind of thing. Mm. Yeah, it's really good.
He'll be on the podcast next week.
Next week,
very exciting.
So yeah, we met up with Louis, long term friend of both mine and Dan's. I should say that Dan Hongi and myself traveled. It wasn't just me solo. So we stayed with Louis and sort of just saw Louis' LA kind of thing, where we had a day planned for us on the Wednesday, the day after we got there, of just different spots, that he likes going to, a couple of places that I hadn't been before, which was good.
So you had a video camera following you around the whole
on
time,
that right? Wednesday, yeah. Right, on the sure. The Tuesday we got there, we just sort of hung out for a bit. Louis went to work. Dan and I went and looked at all the streetwear shops and stuff like that. And then Dan and I went for a sushi meal that night, recommended to us by our friend Randy Moon, who's New York based,
mm-hmm.
one of the owners of Four Horsemen in Brooklyn. And also just knows every spot in every city to go, like, that no one even in that city has heard of, but somehow Randy knows them all. So Dan hit up Randy and was like, well, we want to eat sushi tonight. I don't know why Dan had a craving for sushi the first night in LA of all places, but Randy sent us to this place called Shunji out in some suburb of LA. I can't even remember. And we proceeded to eat about 24 different pieces of sushi.
Is LA sushi like significantly better than Sydney sushi?
Yeah, Sydney seems to be in a bit of a dip. We're actually discussing that at dinner. Like, Dan and I were like, where can you get sushi at in Sydney? And
Dan goes to Sokyo a lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really fuck with Sokyo though. I love Chase, but Sokyo is not really my kind of place. I still like Yoshi,
mm-hmm.
sitting at the counter at Yoshi, but it's always very subdued and very chill kind of thing. So yeah, so it was good. It was $150 a head for some pretty premium stuff. It was pretty baller. We had some really amazing uni from both from Japan and from America. I can't remember the fucking place at the Santa Barbara uni, which mm-hmm. is really nice and sweet. Toro, all that kind of good stuff, and a bunch of, you know, like fish that is native to the California coastline and stuff like that. So it was really good.
Yeah, kind of like I think the second I land in LA, whenever I go, I'm just like, tacos. But I guess you were in Mexico shortly after LA.
So yeah, exactly. But
Hongi had to wait.
That's the thing for me too. Usually in LA, I'm like, fuck, food trucks, tacos. Let's go. But yeah, I guess we didn't eat. I don't think we hit one taco truck the whole time we were there, which was, I think, maybe a little bit. I wasn't too stressed because we were going to Mexico directly after.
Did you go Ricky's Fish
Tacos?
Yeah,
Ricky's Fish Tacos. Yeah. So classic. The next day we woke up and went and did Runyon Canyon.
Uh-huh.
And I haven't ran in God knows how long.
How'd you keep up with the very fit Louis Tikaram?
We went with Louis and Louis's pastry chef Zen, who's also an old Aussie guy. He used to be a sous chef at Yellow and worked for Brent for quite a while. He's now in LA. And those two pretty much do it once a week. They sort of have an EP run club kind of thing. Mm-hmm. All the boys go on Wednesday morning and go for a run. So they sort of did it without even puffing and breaking a sweat. And me and Hongi, I thought Hongi would be fine too, because he runs a fair bit, but
according to his Instagram at least.
Yeah. But I kept up with Hongi no trouble at all on the day. And then I felt really good for the run. I was like, fuck yeah, I do need to start exercising again, as we sort of discussed with you being active now. And then the next 3 days I couldn't really walk. We went up quite a steep, like, stair part of Runyon, and then came down the long way. And I think it was the running downhill, like the front of my calves and my shins was, and my ankles were like really locked up. So sort of getting up and getting out of bed was really hard for the next few days.
And you were there to film a bunch of videos. So I know that when every time I've done videos of people, they love that footage of just walk.
Yeah, I just walk around.
So have you got a real, real great, like, kind of wobble?
I'm not sure, because the next day when we're filming, we were sort of, Louis took us from, basically took us around LA. So we were driving, and you know, you have to drive everywhere in LA.
That's anyway. The best thing about LA.
Yeah. So there wasn't too much walking off into the distance. That was sort of saved for Mexico. And by that time I'd recovered. So yeah, after Runyon, we are.
It's like whenever I DJ at a promo party, and there's someone making a video, they spend 10 minutes just, and it's, sometimes it'll be the same videographer that's made 10 videos that have me DJ'd, and he will spend 10 minutes just filming my hands
doing stuff,
doing nothing on the CD, because I do fuck all what I do. Yeah. Everyone knows that. But it's just like, why, like, how much hand footage? Surely you just have like generic hand footage that you don't need to spend time shooting these new hands doing
the
next
same
to nothing
thing.
Yeah. Like, yeah, anyway,
yeah, there was a fair bit of that going in B-roll.
I need
to get this shot for, like, surely.
Can you guys just all laugh?
Yeah.
Everyone just laugh.
In 4 days, surely you're just going to have enough of this shit anyway. But Yeah, so
this is real alienating talk because it's like very privileged complaints.
Yeah, it's very white.
We got sent somewhere to eat for free and they paid us and it was real hard doing the same thing a few times.
Yeah, so anyway, we picked up the cameraman, Ben, who spent the day with us in LA and then came to Mexico with Dan and I.
Mm-hmm.
And then Louis took us around. So, we went down to Venice and went to Gusta,
yep.
which is like a new bakery owned by the guys who own Jelena as well. And it was pretty amazing space. Big cabinets and a big sort of kitchen behind, baking everything fresh. And then you just sort of pick and choose from the cabinets, like a bunch of cold cuts and like porchetta and brisket and then pastries and then salads and vegetables. And Louis just said, give us all the things, and which was probably a mistake because we literally spent the whole day eating from like 11 a.m. till 11 p.m. And to start off pretty big was probably a mistake, especially with like all the bread and that kind of thing. But it was all really tasty.
Were you drinking too, or had Louis learned his lesson?
No. I mean, Louis and Dan drank that night, but I didn't drink at all.
If you don't know what we're talking about, Louis Tikaram is the most recent episode of Chef's Night In, which is a video that Vice do. Mitch has done one.
Chef's Night Out, bro.
Chef's Night, whatever. No, they all stay in and watch Netflix. It's real great. And Louis is so fucking drunk by the end of it. Like, I've seen that side of him a couple times and I've completely forgotten about it. And everyone got drunk in your video, but I feel like he got drunker than everyone in your video combined.
He was probably on the level of Lukey being drunk.
I don't think I don't know. We can ask him next week. I don't think he remembers. I doubt he remembers like the last 2 hours of that video.
Yeah, probably.
There's like shots of him like really violently chopping pork, and everyone's like,
everyone was like freaking out. Yeah, he did say that.
Cut his hand.
He did say that. Yeah, so we went to Gusta, and then from there we went to the Valley. And whenever I hear of the Valley, I always think of Clueless and the scene where Cher gets robbed.
Yep.
And her dad tells her that everywhere in LA is 20 minutes from the Valley, which I feel like is a massive lie because it's definitely not. And we went to this place called
Clueless.
Yeah, Bill's Burgers.
Yep, I saw that. That was unreal. Yeah,
so it's this tiny little shack on the side of like a main road in the valley, and it's owned by this old geezer. He must be pushing 80.
Mm-hmm.
And two of his ex-wives work in the shop with him. So it used to be called Bill and Hirokio's Burgers.
Is that one of the ex-wives?
Yeah, that's one of the ex-wives. And then they split up, so Bill removed Hirokio's name from the big sign.
And then hired her as staff.
No, but they were already working together, right?
Right.
And so they split up and she was like, well, I still like my job, so I'm not quitting. So she still works there. And then another one of Bill's exes is like, mans the cash register. So it's these three older people, Bill and his two ex-wives. Needless to say, Bill is the grumpiest motherfucker there is. As you would be having two ex-wives break your balls all day.
Yeah.
But it's pretty amazing. So, it's like kind of like the OG burger spot. It's kind of unknown to anyone but locals. So,
has everyone ever, like in that regard, like Apple Pan is one that always comes up in burger recommendations?
Yeah,
in
but
LA.
It's not like a chain or... They're all like chain.
No, Apple Pan.
Is Apple Pan not? Yeah, but this is like literally three people in a tiny little shop.
Yep.
And his grill plate is probably 50 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like that kind of thing. But it was a solid burger. Jeepers chips, and it was good for a laugh with, you know, just watching Bob be grumpy and fucking...
Oh, so he got all that on camera?
Yeah, all that on Amazing. Camera. And he got a little bit grumpy about the camera being there. He was like, am I getting paid for the video? And you know, so that was pretty cool. And then from there, we went and hit Ricky's Fish Tacos, mm-hmm. which is one of my favorite taco trucks. I went there last time I was in LA as well with Lou Dog.
It's like a fried fish taco.
Fried fish, fried shrimp.
Fried lobster.
Fried taco. Lobster, if you're lucky. Yeah, they don't always have the lobster.
I had that last time I was there.
Yeah, really, really good. Really tasty. And that's sort of now... It used to be like in a car park in the suburbs somewhere, and now it's like at a park.
Oh, right.
So, it's like sort of open and green and fresh air and that kind of thing. So, it's a kind of nice place to sit and chill. In that beautiful LA weather, you know, that always stays the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, we went downtown to a place called Taroni, which is like an Italian place that actually started off in Toronto.
Right.
And has sort of gone from a little tiny 50-seat restaurant to I think they have like 10 big ones in Toronto now and a couple other variations, and they employ like 1,000 people. And then they went opened in LA and sort of followed the same business model of opening small first, then building a following and building a reputation. So they opened one in Beverly, which is just around the corner from Lou Dog's house. So
yep.
Before EPLP opened, he pretty much ate there 3 days a week and got to know the owners and that kind of thing. And now they have a space in downtown in an old bank building. So it's like really beautiful high ceilings and big columns and all that kind of stuff. Like sort of a bit reminiscent of Rockpool Bar and Grill here in a sort of grandness kind of thing, but more Italian and more natural wood and that kind of thing. So we went there and we met one of the owners, Max, who's a really charming and eccentric older Italian guy and, you know, very Italian in his ways and what he likes and what he doesn't like and that kind of thing. And he took us on a tour and we looked through the kitchen and he showed us his, like, you know, the line in the kitchen and talked about pasta machines for a little while and talked about pasta. And he said, I should come and learn how to make pasta. And
what did you say to
him? I said, yeah, sure, Max, next time I'm here, yeah, I'd love to. And yeah, then we proceeded to get crushed with food, which was great, but also kind of sucked because we were still going to go to EPLP for a feed. And
oh, yeah, sure. And you haven't eaten it yet?
No, I have. Oh. I have. I've eaten there twice, but okay. It's been 2 years.
Right, sure.
So I really wanted to eat again, you know, like I love Louis' food and you always want to eat at your mate's places, you know what I mean? So we had a magnum of Radicon because Max doesn't like natural wine, and the only reason he has natural wine in the building is for Louis, Limbo and Jordan when they're in town. So he was like, we may as well get rid of it because Limbo's in New York and Jordan's back here now. So
that's Thomas Lim and Jordan
Toft. So yeah, so we had a bottle of Radicon and that was all my drinking for the trip basically.
You love, that's like the one thing you,
yeah,
you, the
I, one I thing you like love, drinking. I love Radicon, yeah. I love Radicon. And then yeah, from there we went back to EP, and so this was almost 10 p.m. by this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then by the time we got to EP's, like, we were all just crushed. And so we ordered like 3 things to just have for video content basically. And then Yumi Ayo came and met us.
Good friend. I would give him an introduction. I genuinely don't know what the fuck Yumi Ayo does or has ever done. He worked on stuff for Rihanna at some point.
I don't even think Yumi knows. But yeah, so Yumi came and met us and ate all the food for us. And then from there, we went to one of LA's apparently most exclusive clubs and the spot to be on a Wednesday night. Yeah,
and
in
so
LA.
I started getting texts from Mitch. I don't know, whatever time it was in the afternoon when you were out, just being like, oh my God, this fucking DJ... it's just train wrecking songs. They don't even like match the same. They're not even the same tempo, same BPM. I'm like, well, Mitch knows his shit.
He's taught me well, bro. This music knowledge just really rubbed off on him.
And I just complaining about how shit the DJ was, and we were texting, and I was like, about how, like, you know, which LA clubs he should go to. He should have tracked down them jeans and seen him play.
Yeah, the thing was, we were only there for Wednesday night, though.
Yeah,
so sure. The options were limited.
And then suddenly, I loved the follow up text was, oh, now Mixmaster Mike is playing. Mixmaster Mike was the Beastie Boys DJ. I was in the Invisible Scratch Pickles. He's a scratch DJ, but all scratch DJs who used to just do like sets that were not meant to make you dance have now been forced to become party DJs.
Yeah, basically.
So what did he do?
Played terrible EDM remixes of things.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. So the club's called Warwick, and Louis, the owner of Warwick, goes to EP a bunch and with his young daughter. So Louis has obviously formed a friendship with him and called in a favor to let us skip the line and get in and get that VIP treatment and that kind of thing, which was amazing because, like, that was probably the most fun part of just walking through, all, like, you know, 100 people lining up and just walking straight in the door. And then when we got in there, there's no dance floor.
Oh.
It's just booze and tables.
Oh, so there's a table service joint.
Yeah. So, like, right. The idea is that you pay for a table or pay for a booth, and then... LA actually has lockouts too, right?
2 a.m.
2 a.m. So, the club didn't get jumping until 12:30.
Mm-hmm.
We got there at 11 and there was a line around the corner from 11, but inside the club was empty till 12:30.
So, where are they? They're just lining up just to line up? Well, just to make it look like it's
They're
busy.
Not letting them in because I guess the club's already made their money from selling the tables.
Right.
so they don't need the club to be busy the whole time. And then eventually they let people in. So at 12:30 it starts to fill up, and then from 1 to 2 it's full and jammed.
Yep.
But then at 2 o'clock it closes. So it's kind of weird. But the whole time we were there, everyone was doing their best to look like they were not having fun. There was no, I like
mean, in their defense, Mixmaster Mike was DJing.
Well, you know, I'm sure Mixmaster Mike could put an amazing set together, but when you feel like you have to do EDM remixes.
Yeah, and then the crowd's not giving you anything back.
Yeah, so it was a really weird experience. And Hongi and Louis both wanted to get turnt because they were away from their wives and kids and, you know, that kind
and
of thing.
And that's what those two together do best.
That, exactly. So it was.
In fact, I think all three of you are going to be at, or I mean, in particular, Hongi and Louis are going to be at Halfway Crooks this Saturday night.
Yeah, I'll come through.
For the first time in a long time.
In a long time. Yeah.
Looking forward to putting some witches' hats out so Hongi doesn't knock everybody's drinks over.
So, yeah, that was a very strange experience. Like, I know I'm too old to go clubbing anyway and lazy, but that was really like, man, why do people line up for this?
Yeah, I had a similar experience when I went to Hollywood. I was staying in like Burbank when I was on tour, and staying at someone who I was on tour with's cousin, whose rich parents in Alaska paid for him to live in a Holiday Inn in Burbank. And he was a real douchebag, and he was like, you know, okay, keep this night free because I'm going to show you the real Hollywood.
Yeah.
And he took us to a club, and the fucking waiting time was 2.5 hours.
Yeah.
And he's like, 2.5 hours, can you believe it? Must be crazy inside. And I was like, yeah, all right, I'm not waiting. So I went and like found like some weird R&B club, yeah, in an old Lebanese restaurant, and
yes,
ended up ditching everybody for 2 days.
Sounds fun. Like a good move. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so that was LA, and then the next day Louis had to do a bit of running around before he flew back to Sydney. So Hongi and I just sort of hit in and out. And then
was that, actually I was going to ask you, so you put up photos of all the meals you had when you, yeah, were away.
Yeah.
And you put up the, you know, the you've got to do it.
You got to,
the in, yeah, and out. Did that photo get more likes than every other photo you put up
might,
when you,
yeah, I think it might.
I reckon a photo of me eating in and out has more likes than like my wedding photo on, yeah, Instagram.
Probably. That's the way Instagram works. But yeah, and then we caught a red eye. Oh, then we went to Bestia actually for our last meal.
Awesome.
But, which I hadn't been to before. One of Louis' favorite places in downtown LA. One of the probably the most popular restaurants in LA as well, which was actually really good. I think Louis knew what to order. So I think we had sort of the best experience, and they really looked after us as well, which is great.
Did he take you to Salt's Cure as well?
Yeah, well, we didn't. Salt's Cure has now moved into a new spot.
Right.
From where it was, and now they only do breakfast in the old spot. So the first morning we got there, we went there, but they just sort of do the griddle cakes and a couple of other things now.
Right.
So it's a bit different to what it used to be, but we hit that on the first morning.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Cool. Still good. Still, but good,
you want that meat. Their meat though is
so, yeah, it's not, it wasn't as good as it used to be.
Their bacon and their breakfast sausages off the hook.
Yeah. So it sort of changed from how it was, but we didn't get to go to the new spot though. And I kind of wanted to do Squirrel.
I was going to hit you up to ask you to bring me back some squirrel jam.
Yeah.
The jam from Squirrel.
Yeah, but we didn't do Squirrel. So that's on my list for next time.
You've not been?
No, I've never been to Squirrel.
It's just like, yeah, it's a very good cafe.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. And then, yeah, so Bestia was really, really great. And then straight from Bestia, we went to the airport and jumped on the plane to Cancun and then drove to Tulum.
That's the end of the episode, guys.
That's
nothing,
it.
Nothing more interesting, yeah, interesting happened to Mitch after that. Nah, so we got to talk about Mexico now. Do we want to give general impressions of Mexico, a place you've never been, somewhere that I've always wanted to go, but
yeah,
I've been able to do yet?
I don't know if I can give impressions of Mexico because we literally were only in Tulum,
yep,
and only.
And it's a very different part to.
Yeah, but man, fuck, it was good. Like to go, like, to hear that it was freezing cold back in Sydney and we were sitting in 35 degree temperature was really nice.
Yep.
And, you know, I love like swimming in the ocean and all that kind of thing. So for me, it was fucking amazing. And we sort of stayed.
To be fair, I was doing the same thing in Byron Bay.
Yes.
Last week too.
Yeah, yeah. So we stayed pretty close to the center of town and sort of a little bit away from the main beach stretch where all the resorts and that kind of thing are and where Noma is located. So we had it pretty good because it meant we could get into the city and hit the taco spots really easily. And then anytime we went down to where the area where Noma and Arca and Heartwood and that kind of thing are, it's just one long narrow road.
Mm-hmm.
So once you're in there, it takes you a while to get back out. So it was kind of good that we stayed out of it.
Yeah, sure.
So I would recommend that to anyone that goes, sort of stay closer to town,
because
it allows you to hit all the taco spots and the, you know, all the good street food and that kind of thing. And then you can just taxi down and go for a swim.
How many days were you there?
3.5.
How many tacos did you eat?
Probably in the 40s to 50s.
Fuck.
Yeah.
That's amazing, bro. I was going to reprimand you.
We went pretty hard.
Fuck.
Nah, we went pretty hard.
That's amazing.
So, one night we went to Arca for dinner, which is a restaurant in Tulum that's actually owned by a couple of Aussies, a couple of Cam's friends, my business partner's friends, actually. And they sort of gave us a bunch of recommendations and hooked us up with a couple of things while we're there. So, we went there for dinner. Really good. Like, if Noma wasn't there, Arca would be the best restaurant.
What kind of
in Tulum.
Cuisine?
Sort of like locally inspired, but just sort of restaurant fare, you know, like
sure.
ceviche and octopus and that kind of thing, and meat and this and that, but restaurant-y. And the crazy thing in Tulum is because it's so fucking hot and humid, all of the restaurants are just like open air on sand, basically, right?
Unreal.
There's no floors down. There's no, like, they sort of have, every restaurant sort of has like a pergolaed area. And then they just have tables out in the open kind of thing. And everything's lit by candlelight. And it's quite a logistical nightmare because there's no... Every restaurant has to get water delivered.
Right.
So, there's these big tanker trucks constantly up and down the main road just delivering water to everyone, basically. Like, I just assumed that everyone would have as much electricity as they need and all this stuff. But Tulum's actually a really poor area. So, the logistics of running anything in there are pretty crazy. And then to see these places just sort of built onto the sand, and they just sort of, everyone has like a wood fire oven and a coal grill and that kind of thing. And all the cooking seems to be done over open fire, which is awesome. And yeah, and then after eating at Arca and after basically eating the whole menu, we then went and hit two different taco spots and ate about 24 tacos.
You were with Hongi, and Hongi, I think, would have eaten.
We can eat. We sort of
hundreds of tacos a couple of years ago before he opened El
Yeah,
Arca. Yeah.
We broke our cameraman in the first day and a half, basically, from eating. So it was pretty cool. So the first day we got there and we went to Hanario, which had been sort of the most popular Instagram spot.
Yep.
From all the sort of chefs and stuff that had been there, like Matty Matheson and Bo Beck and like all these different foodies and stuff, had all been like, Honario's is the spot. And then a couple of other friends, like the Contra guys from New York, were there. Su Chan was there as well. We had lunch with Su Chan on the first day, who Lev's sister actually works with in New York at
Gareth
the moment.
Chan, yeah.
My friend Pam, who used to work at Samia and Roberta's and Teresi in New York, was there doing some work at Heartwood. So, like, all these people had sort of given us a bunch of recommendations. So, we hit Hanario's first, which is really cool. It's like a real workman's place. All the locals go there for breakfast. It's like lechon. And then they do a turkey taco as well, which was actually sold out when we went. And then, you know, asado and that kind of thing. So, it was really, really tasty. And then from there,
majority of like, is it your standard Tulum kind of taco? Tulum taco, sorry. Is it like a grilled meat or a stewed meat?
No, grilled.
Grilled, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's usually lechon or al pastor.
Sure.
So from there, we went down and saw the Noma guys, said hello, bumped into the Contra guys, bumped into Morgie.
Morgan the Gloam was also there.
Yeah,
for some
like
reason.
Everyone was there. Paul Carmichael was there. Annalise was there. So like everyone, it seemed like everyone from Australia sort of managed to go in the last week kind of thing to hang out. So it was really cool. Like at one point Jeremiah from Contra said it was like the G7 summit of the younger generation of chefs kind of thing, all hanging out. It was really cool. So went and saw Spreads and Kat and everyone at Noma and had a cup of iced tea and then went for a swim at the beach for a few hours, then went home and had a nap, and then we went to Noma that night, the first night we were there. So it was fucking unbelievable, bro.
Right. So, you've been to Noma in Mexico, you've been to the original Noma in Copenhagen.
Yeah.
Copenhagen. You've been surrounding everything. I don't even know. Who knows?
Whatever.
You're saying taco in
my defense.
CPH. So.
Yeah.
And you've also been to the one where it was in Sydney.
Mm-hmm.
Which was your preferred of the two of those?
Copenhagen by far.
Okay, sure. Yeah, you were, you know, you overall enjoyed Sydney, but you were critical of quite a few of the dishes.
Yeah.
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 Noma, Mexico, off the bat. How does it rate against the other two?
on par, if not pushing Copenhagen.
Yeah, wow, that's amazing. Yeah,
it shat all over Sydney. Yeah, and it's funny, right? Because I didn't get to go to the Japan pop-up, but everyone from Australia that I know that went to the Noma Japan said Noma Japan was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone from Australia that went to Noma Australia said it was great, but wasn't transcendent.
Sure.
Everyone from overseas that I spoke, like, thought Australia, like the Sydney Noma, was next level. So I don't know if it's something to do with our familiarity with the ingredients used that sort of lowered the standard that
little bit
for us.
Too.
Yeah. Yeah. Whereas, you know, going to Copenhagen, eating so much stuff that you haven't seen in that environment that's different from where you spend your whole life kind of thing is a really amazing experience. And then to take that to Mexico, where you're sitting, your feet are in sand, like wearing slides, wearing shorts and a t-shirt in like the, you know, still what is, in my opinion, the best restaurant in the world, no matter where it is.
Sure.
With this amazing level of hospitality and service. And sitting in this amazing sort of jungle garden where they're doing 140 covers a night, which is not small, especially when people are eating, you know, pushing 20 courses.
Yep.
But the restaurant never felt busy.
Really?
You never felt like anyone was rushing around. You never felt like they were in the shit. You know, and it wasn't a huge space. So to do 140 covers with that number of people in the timeline they do, that's another thing I love about Noma. There's no waiting between courses. It's bang, 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 bang.
How long were you in there for?
We had our meal in just under 2 hours.
Wow, man. Yeah. That's fucking impressive.
Yeah. And they push it and they're constantly like, the chefs are constantly out going, okay, call that table away. Let's go, let's go, let's go. And that's the way Renee wants it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way I like to eat as well. So it's really great for us. So like I said, none of the restaurants in Tulum are enclosed. They're all sort of open to the air. So Noma was the same.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
And they had two sort of verandas on each side. And then all the tables in the middle of the restaurant are open to the sky, basically. So it rained halfway through the meal. And they have like a plan B for when it rains. Part of the restaurant, they have like a sort of tarp collapsible thing that opens up.
Mm-hmm.
And then that covers some of the restaurant. And then they move everybody else into the kitchen. And they sort of have these collapsible things on the pass that they flick up. And
wow.
They become tables in the kitchen. So we started off in the dining room. I use the term room really loosely.
Yep.
We started off in like the beach basically and had sort of the first six or seven courses there, and then it started to rain. We were like, oh, it's actually kind of refreshing. And then it like really started to rain. We're like, okay, we'll move. So they moved us into the kitchen and we were literally sitting on the pass with Stewie calling dockets just there, someone plating the escamoles right next to me. I was on the kitchen side. So, we basically had people plating dishes either side of me.
That's insane.
And Hongi was on the other side.
And how did they deal with having you in their space?
Nothing. They're just having a chat.
That's
you
amazing.
Know, like yeah. Hanging out, having a laugh, you know. Stewie, the sous chef, who was calling the part. So the kitchen was split into two sides. So the start of the meal, all the courses come from one side and then it flows across to the other side of the kitchen so they don't sort of get backlogged.
Mm-hmm.
And the way they had it, they have like stations set up and each station is a different dish.
Right.
So we sat on the hot side next to the sort of fire and that kind of thing. So it was pretty warm, but again, it was like pretty amazing, and just watched all these plates get put together and listen to the calls of the rest of the kitchen and everyone moving and how the flow of service was going and that kind of thing, which was really cool to see as well. And it was phenomenal, man. Like, it was probably, I think Noma Copenhagen and Noma Mexico were the top two restaurant meals of my lifetime. And they're a combination of everything. It's not just the food is amazing. It's the service. It's the environment. It's that kind of thing. And something that pissed me off about Sydney was the way everyone said, oh, Renee shows us how to cook Australian food and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But what they did in Sydney isn't Australian food. It's Noma food with some Australian ingredients, right? So. And the same in Mexico. I don't feel like it was Mexican food. It's Noma food. And Noma food is on a fucking another level.
Mm-hmm.
But when they get to play with those ingredients that they haven't seen before, and it sort of just, it seems to spark something in the whole team and Renee and the front of house staff and all the guys in the kitchen, the R&D team and everything. When they get to play with new ingredients, they just like, they just step it up. And Mexico has some phenomenal produce, like all the exotic fruits.
Yeah, you're going to go into some of the your favorite dishes.
Yeah, we'll go through it. And like, I still haven't really processed how good it was. Because I'm never going to eat that food again. And they're never going to cook that food again either. So,
yeah, the temporary nature of these Noma pop-ups is crazy to me.
It's hard. And I don't remember what half of the things are called. I've got the menu at home. I should have brought it with me. But we basically started out with some native flowers and the fruit from the cactus.
Mm-hmm.
And then the sort of root that mezcal is made from.
Yep.
Which, you know, traditionally when they make mezcal, they take this root and they cook it under coal and they ferment it and la la la. So we had a piece of it that had been cooked under coal and it's just like smoky molasses kind of thing. And you just sort of suck the flesh off the stringy parts of the root. An amazing way to start a meal. Like ingredients you've never seen before.
Using your fingers.
You're never going to eat again. Yeah. Eating your fingers, you know. And then an amazing raw clam, which is one of the best clams I've ever eaten in my life.
Did it have like a similar consistency to every other clam you've eaten, or was it?
No, it was like quite bitey.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, just really, again, the garnishes and stuff they do, like everything just heightens everything else.
You clams over oysters? Some clams over oysters.
Yeah. Yeah, depending. Like that clam over oysters, sure. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, cool.
And obviously, I wasn't drinking.
Yep.
So, Kat and James, another young Australian who works on the floor at Noma, had made a tea, an iced tea pairing.
That's amazing.
For me, which iced is tea. Yeah, which is amazing. Again, like that's that. I mean, I guess we're kind of spoiled because we know the guys. So, but the level that they go to in their hospitality and the personal aspect of it, it's like, it's unbelievable. And I'm not sure if everyone could have got an iced tea pairing, but they told me it was made just for me. So I'll take it. You know what I mean? And then after the clam was salbutes, which is like a taco but fried. So the masa sort of puffs and it becomes like a puffed taco. So it was their take on a salbute with like tomato and beach herbs, like roasted dried tomato and beach herbs, like just sort of one bite, really tasty again. Then there was a chilled soup with all different flowers of the moment. So a very Noma thing, using flowers and forage things, etc.
Yeah. So did you speak to them about where they'd been foraging in the area?
No, not really. Like my mind was so fried after the meal. Yeah, like just, sure. I was just in awe kind of thing, you know? So,
cause they spend the better part of like half
they
a year.
They do a lot of research and stuff. Yeah. And obviously they had Rosio with them. Rosio's from Mexico.
Rosie O'Donnell.
No, Rosie Sanchez, who now has Hijija Sanchez in Copenhagen, but mm-hmm. Was at Noma for a long time, was a big part of the sort of upcoming of Noma. So she was back in her native land and, you know, so they sort of had a couple of inside little
Tips,
yeah, I guess you could say, yeah. So it was like a masa broth with a lime granita.
Yep.
And the granita just sort of melted into the broth, kept it cold and seasoned it. It was really fucking good. And then a young coconut,
my favorite rapper,
split in half. So young that only just a light gel has formed on the inside of the coconut.
Oh, whoa.
So it hasn't actually formed the white flesh. It's just like a gel. A massive fucking spoon of caviar. Another spoon of like coconut cream and some kombu salt. And you just sort of like scoop the coconut cream, the caviar, and then scrape the gel off the coconut. It's fucking unbelievable, bro.
That sounds so like, cool.
I posted, you know, you can check out mine and Dan's Instagram. Like, there's a lot of posts.
At Honkstagram.
Dan's pretty much posted everything, and I'm going to sort of leak mine out. But that dish was unbelievable.
A lot of throwback. Was it throwback?
Throwback Thursdays, yeah. And then like a plate of fruit, all the sort of native Mexican fruits, star fruit. I can't even remember all of them. There was like 15 fruits in a bowl with like, again, a little oil and chili broth kind of thing. And man, it's just so fucking good. So simple, but so amazing. And the things that they do with it just heighten everything.
Yeah.
You know, it was just mango, a bit of avocado, a cactus fruit.
And it's not even like, I'm looking at the picture now, it's not even that well presented. It's so
No, it's
so
just simple. Literally just a bowl of fruit, but fuck, it was tasty.
Yeah, yeah.
Then a banana ceviche.
Uh-huh.
With burnt banana skin and seaweed oil. Again, really simple, but...
Sweet?
No, quite savory, right, with the burnt sort of powder paste, and just tasty and interesting. And then like an oyster taco in like a native cabbage leaf kind of thing.
Yep.
Again, just fucking tasty. And then there was like a sort of a native seaweed that they'd filled with a broth, and then you sort of bit the seaweed and sucked the broth out.
Oh, unreal.
So just what kind of broth fun. Was it? You know, I can't even remember. honestly, like...
And you get that many courses.
Yeah. And then a pumpkin, a little baby pumpkin that was sort of roasted in the coals with pumpkin inside it. So they sort of scoop all the pumpkin out, reform it all together, and then it was sourced with a sauce made from avocado leaves.
Awesome.
Amazing. Escamole tostada. So an ant larvae tostada.
Oh, wow.
So a little crisp with beans around it, some beach herbs, and then the escamoles on top. And this dish literally had 10 people around a bench plating it from the start of the night to the end of the night. Like,
and
there was...
And you sitting in the middle of it.
Yeah, basically. Yeah. So there was so like, if you look at it, all those beans around the outside were individually placed. So there's like 50 little tiny baby broad bean looking beans around the outside of the dish.
What a beautiful
each
dish,
put on by hand. So it was literally 10 people just standing there all night putting beans on tostadas.
Making 140 of those a night. Yep.
And then, the octopus. You've probably seen the octopus all over Instagram.
Yeah, I think so.
So it was like an octopus leg cooked in like a black masa salt crust kind of thing.
Yep.
Super tender, super juicy, and then served with a roasted pumpkin seed sauce. Best piece of octopus I've ever had.
And you're a big octopus man.
Yeah, I do love octopus, but likewise. Fuck, yeah, it was unbelievable.
Spectacular looking dish as well.
Yeah. And then tacos. So, lechon tacos, roasted suckling pig.
Right, so they straight up did
Yeah, did some- they did that, yeah. And they had these Yucatan ladies, old abuelas, old grandmas, making all the tortillas by hand.
Unreal.
Cooking them, no tortilla press, no nothing, just shaping them by hand, mixing the masa, and then cooking them over on like a coal fire. Fucking so good, man. And the ladies just sat there all night, just rolling masa as well, you know, and chatting amongst themselves.
I've been doing that for years.
Yeah. Served with a bit of jicama, roasted banana, lime, and then a soft shell crab taco as well, which was fucking out of control. And then a mole. So, it was Rosio's mole, so like a chocolate spice paste kind of thing, served with like a grilled native herb stuffed with some other native herbs. So, right. It was like crispy and savory.
Like a big leaf.
Yeah, a big leaf. So about the size of a taco kind of thing.
Yeah, right, wow.
And then like just spoon the mole over the top.
So texturally that would have been pretty
awesome. Yeah, it was awesome. And the mole was fucking amazing too. And then you got more tortillas to like mop up all the mole.
That's so cool because normally like, you know, when you think mole, it's always paired with some like just overcooked piece of meat.
Yeah, but I've sort of noticed that in the fine dining, so to speak, restaurants in Mexico, mole has its own sort of thing. And it seems to be like the last thing you eat before you go to desserts.
Right, cool.
Like at Puyo, or however you say it, they serve mole as the last course. And you get two different kinds of mole. A really dark, dark mole that's almost like a master stock mole that's been used and remade and remade and remade. So it's really old. And then you get like a lighter fresh one in the middle. And that's the last course kind of thing. And so this sort of reminded me of that, of having mole as the last thing, because it has that little bit of sweetness and spice to it before you went into the sort of dessert courses.
So you've gone through all the main, like, you know, the savory dishes. Yeah. And besides the pig, it was all seafood.
All seafood.
Vegetables. And ants.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, like, you know. And like we were foolish, not bursting, but like very satisfied, and like every course was so fucking tasty, and so interesting and so unique that all your senses are satisfied, you know. And then the first dessert course was a grilled avocado with avocado ice cream,
unreal,
and like the sort of oil from the chamote seed.
Mm-hmm.
So, sort of like bitter almond flavor.
Right, sure.
That was Hongi's least favorite course. I quite liked it. And by saying least favorite,
he just thought it was interesting.
It's still like fucking amazing. Yeah, you know? Like,
what didn't you like about it?
I think it was just avocado. You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
sure.
And he doesn't like bitter almond flavor either.
Right.
And then a chili.
Oh, man.
So, like a chipotle. So, you only eat one. So, it's a chipotle that they've sort of rehydrated, stuffed with a chocolate sorbet, and then sort of like lacquered as well. So it's like sweet, a little bit of spicy, and then you get the rich chocolate as you eat it, and you just sort of eat the chili and suck the ice cream out. It was fucking amazing.
That's so good.
And then Eve, another friend of ours who works in the kitchen at Noma, was telling us that someone has to go through and taste every chili before they use it
to make
because
sure
some of them
spicy,
are insanely fucking hot. So I would not like to have that job, but
I'd like to interview the person that did that.
Yeah, that was a really amazing mouthful as well. And then from there,
holy moly, Mitch is just scrolling through photos of all the teas that were put together for him. And
then the last course was an overripe mango. So they sort of got these ripe mangoes in and then just sort of massage them over time and let them get really ripe. And then they just cut a little hole in the top and he just sucked the mango out of its skin, basically.
Wow.
It was fucking the best mango I've ever eaten in my life. Yeah, and you just got mango all over yourself. But fuck, it was so good. And that was the last course. And then, you know, like I sort of spoke about how amazing the service is. And because it was so fucking hot, about three different times through the meal, like at the start, James Spreads and Kat Bont came up to us and put a cold towel on our neck and just sort of stood there holding the cold towel on our neck for a minute to sort of freshen us up. And then halfway through the meal, Renee and Rosio came and did the same thing. And, you know, like just those levels of
very personal touches.
Yeah, just to have a sort of a laugh with you. And Renee would come over and check on us and see if we were too hot or if we wanted to move back outside or, you know, that kind of thing. And like, it's just such a special place. And all the front of house staff know everything about the food, and all the chefs in the kitchen know everything about the front of house. And, you know, they take you on a tour at the end of the kitchen so you can see the operation and that kind of thing. And every person knows from go to woe, from the start of the pop-up, how everything was before they were there, the development, all that kind of thing. The dedication and the passion, as wanky as it sounds, and the commitment that every member of the team that work for Noma, it's unbelievable. And it's really, it's pretty inspiring. And it's also like, I said at one point during the meal, I was like, why do we even cook? What's even the fucking point? You know what I mean? Because I don't have that level of commitment.
Maybe if you go back to that Italian guy, he can teach you.
No, fuck that. But, you know, like, it really is on another level. And obviously, like, we can't all be on that level and there's space for everybody. But what they do and the dedication of the whole team. And it's really not just Renee, you know, it's really about the whole team, from the sous chefs to the fucking, to Ali, the kitchen hand, who was there and running shit and just smiling and being amazing and interacting with the customers and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's just such a special team of people, and that's what makes it special wherever they go. So, yeah.
Do you remember, I know you didn't drink any of it, but do you remember what some of the booze?
A lot of natural stuff. They poured, you know, they poured a couple of things for Dan, and then they had like a couple of beers and meads and stuff from Mexico.
Any mezcal, tequila
kind of stuff? I think Morgie had a mezcal pairing. Mm-hmm. And then we had like a bunch of kombuchas and fermented drinks and juices and all that kind of stuff too. So, yeah, it was crazy.
That choice of making sure you got the right pairing it must be so stressful.
Yeah, but even like the juice pairings, like eating something and then drinking the juice with it, just, and like I don't really like pairings. Like, I'm like, drink whatever the fuck you want to drink and eat whatever you want to eat. Yeah. But they really nailed it. And then the next day, about 15 of us all went to Chimico's, this place on the beach.
Yep.
Literally just plastic Corona tables and chairs scattered through palm trees, and they just do lobster ceviche and deep fried fish basically, and then you sit there.
So a perfect restaurant.
Perfect restaurant. Sit there with your feet in the sand drinking Coco Naturale or Coco Loco, which is coconut spiked with rum.
Oh, unreal.
And then eating lobster ceviche.
Did they make you one with tea instead of rum?
Nah, I just had Coco Naturales. And then you just go for a swim in this crystal clear blue water. Paul Carmichael spent about 3 hours laying in a hammock. You know, he was in his element. He didn't want to leave. So, it was crazy.
You just flicked over to some of the best looking tacos I've ever seen in my life.
And then, so we went to, this was the next night. We went to Arca for dinner and then followed that up by crushing about 12 tacos each.
Yep.
So, we went to Taqueria El Nero on the main strip of town. So, there's actually quite a few places on the main strip of town. Honarias is sort of off to the side. And then on the main strip, there's Taqueria El Nero, and everyone just calls it Tacos Al Pastor, but it actually has a proper name. And they're both really cool, really tasty, the same sort of thing. This time they had the lengua and the tripe and all that, all the offal cuts and all that good shit, which is really good. We smashed a lot of tripe and a lot of tongue and all that.
Tongue goodness. Tacos and cabeza, the head taco. Yeah. That's my favorite. But you got to stew that. You can't.
And then they also do at Al Pastor. They do salbutes.
Bro, look at the colors.
Poncheros or something like that, which is like a crispy tortilla that they spread with beans and then put another crispy tortilla on top.
Yum.
And then put the topping on top, and that was sick. And then so we were pretty crushed after that night, after having Noma and then like going hard the next day. So the next morning, went to a pozole place.
Yep.
And pozole is like a pork broth with like the stewed pork meat in it, corn, and then you hit it with a bunch of toppings. So this place, La Mexicanita, had four different pozoles. It had a white, a blanco, two verdes, and a rojo, a red one. So the difference in the green ones is one was green chili and one was made from pumpkin seeds. So it almost reminded me of like a ramen broth, a really light Kyoto style ramen broth, really light and clean. And then from going from the white to the red, each one sort of got deeper in flavor.
Yeah, cool.
And the red was like really deep in flavor. And like, I think has like a lot of annatto seed and some chili and chipotle and stuff in it, but it wasn't like overly spicy. And then the same thing, you lay it with radish and onion and lime juice and avocado and chicharron and tortilla chips.
Yeah.
And so it was like the perfect like rejuvenation breakfast.
That really sounds like quite close to what we love about Asian food.
Mexican food really has that parallel. And you know, the fact that you get served lime with everything and you get something fresh to put on top of everything, whether it be radish or fresh onion or whatever, like to cut the richness and fattiness of the meat. The Mexican food really has a lot of balance to it. And then we hit a grilled chicken spot, Polo Bronco, which actually people seem to have a mixed relationship with it, because a lot of people seem to know someone that has got food poisoning. And then a lot of people say it's their favorite place in Tulum.
Right.
So we went and it was fucking, it was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
grilled chicken over coals. They sort of marinate the chicken in garlic, pineapple juice, salt, pepper, I think maybe paprika or something as well, and then grill it over the flame, serve it with like tomato rice, a tomato chili salsa, pickled cabbage, guacamole, and then really nice sort of thick, fluffy tortillas.
Man, that sounds perfect.
Fuck, it was so fucking good. It was one of the tastiest things we ate in Tulum.
So that was your last meal in Tulum?
And that was the last meal in Tulum.
And then did you?
No, then we went to another taco spot called Canaston.
Well done. Mitch hasn't written any of these down. He's just remembering.
So Canaston is like tacos, but they make them all and then keep them in a basket. So they sort of steam, and I think the Canaston is the basket.
Mm-hmm.
So they steam in the basket, and then you just order them from there, and they give them to you straight, and then you hit them with all the toppings and stuff you want. So that was our last breakfast that we ate with Paulie and Morgie.
Yeah,
before we went to the airport.
Unreal. And wait, did you fly? Is there a direct flight from?
No, so then from Cancun to Dallas, and Dallas home. 17.5 hour flight.
Did you get any time off in Dallas?
No, it was literally. to plane.
Pretty amazing if you then got it to like hoe down on barbecue and then come home.
Yeah. But yeah, so we were pretty crushed.
So you were filming videos for the majority of that trip. Where are those videos going to show up?
Well, Dan and I are going to throw a party or two as part of Good Food Month. We haven't sort of finalized all that, but those videos will be cut and used for promotion and stuff leading up to that party.
You guys
going to
cook Mexican or something?
Well, yes and no. We're going to like find inspiration, so to speak, in quotation marks, from our trip and throw a party kind of thing. So what we'll probably do is cook a bunch of shit over open log fires and, you know, have some mad loud music and eat with our hands kind of thing.
You going to book me or Mixmaster Mike to DJ?
Basically, yeah. Going to book you and invite a bunch of our friends kind of thing.
Unreal. Well, that sounds great. And obviously, we'll keep you posted with details on the Mitchin. We have an email address, everybody, and occasionally we get people sending us emails. I haven't checked it in a while, and I've just checked it today, and we have a whole bunch of things to kind of briefly mention.
Just quickly, I'll say if anyone's going to Tulum or Mexico and wants a list, just email us, and I'll list everything down.
TheMitchinPodcast@gmail.com is how you get in touch. So Nick Josie wrote to us in regards to something we spoke about quite a few episodes ago about chefs who create a signature dish at one restaurant, then move on to another restaurant. Yep. Does that signature dish remain theirs or the restaurant?
A derisive topic.
Nick Josie has written, co-written with a lawyer from Clayton Utz, which you can find at claytonutz.com, basically like the legalities of whether or not they do. It's a lot of jargon.
What's the too long do not read version?
I could not. I tried to read it really quickly while you were talking about tacos and I couldn't. Well, we'll follow up on that later, but I'll post that on the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheMitchin. We also got Lee Carroll sent just a photo saying hashtag chef life. And it was just
he fucked a Glad wrap.
He sent it, very early in the morning. It's a picture of Glad wrap rolled incorrect. Like, what is it? Boxed incorrectly?
Boxed incorrectly, yeah.
They put the tape over the wrong hole.
Dickheads.
He sent that at like 2 in the morning. And then the next day sent, "Hello, boys. I sent a pretty cryptic email last night. Please let me explain. There was a lot of Lafoig 10-year-old involved." Lafoig? You drink scotch all the time, right, Mitch?
I don't drink scotch, but I think I know the one he means.
Love the show, fellas. I have an AVPN accredited pizzeria in Cronulla called Cream Margarita of Savoy, and your podcast keeps me amused while I make the dough overnight. Thanks for your good work, Lee. I love the idea of everyone just emailing us whenever someone fucks the ladder up. This one's from James Latham. He says, "From Kathmandu to Rush Cutters Bay, good work, Mitch." And there's a photo of what looks to be some kind of restaurant in Kathmandu called Acme.
So, I'm expanding worldwide. Expanding?
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
Mr. Worldwide.
The next logical destination for you.
Yeah, we saw
Acme Guest House.
We saw a bunch of Acme's.
Garden restaurant.
Yeah, we saw a bunch of Acme's overseas, actually.
You expanded into the Roadrunner cartoons back in the 60s.
Yeah.
Got on this one here from Love World. "Hi, handsome. You must have been the second man God created after Adam. Apparently, God must have lavish, abundant time to make such an enchanting... You look so enchanting. Lol, handsome. My name is Faith Sanders. I like your profile and would love to know more about you. You can inbox me here or text me. And then there's a lovely photo of what is definitely a real listener. Although I want to know who she thinks is handsome, me or Mitch. I don't know.
Yeah, we'll both have to email her and find out.
Speaking of me being handsome, I did a live podcast when I was in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And
which one?
The Little Dum Dum Club, which is a comedy podcast. And it was a very drunken affair. Yeah. They got me to DJ their live podcast, which just consisted of me playing air horn samples and Tim Allen grunts while they told terrible jokes.
Basically your favorite thing ever.
Yeah, it was great. Born for that job, baby. And one of our listeners, John Azzapardi, whose two favorite podcasts are The Mitchin and The Little Dum Dum Club, was very surprised and happy to see me there. He emailed me midway through my set saying, "The weight loss shows, Levs. Killing it. Killing it, mate." So I liked it. Email us pictures of glad wrap and compliments. The Mitchin Podcast at Gmail.
Is there any the opposite of compliments? I like the opposite.
No
of
insults.
That's a shame.
I can check out to see if we've got any bad reviews.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that's a possibility.
Yeah.
I went to Byron while you were away
and for a wedding.
We ended up eating at some pretty decent meals at Fleet and Harvest.
Yeah.
Fleet in particular. It was one of those nights where we had both kids with us. We forgot to make a booking at Fleet. Didn't realize that was such a small.
Yeah.
And because it was forecast to rain, and so they were full up. And then it's, for whatever reason, on Sunday morning, even though it said it was going to be torrential rain all day, it just didn't rain all day. So we got a text saying the outdoor table is in use now. Do you want it?
Yeah.
And managed to just have that perfect moment where both kids fell asleep 5 minutes before we got there.
Yeah.
We were able to transfer them to prams and a carrier. And we had like a 2.5 hours of us just drinking wines. And we got
lit up.
Very, very good service, like incredible service. And then when Archie woke up, they'd gone to a brownie shop around the corner and got him a brownie. So as soon as he woke up, he had chocolate.
He was like happy.
Like that's like, yeah. I mean, not quite good on the level alone. No, yeah, but I was like, oh, these guys know what they're talking about.
Astrid's good at what she does.
Yeah, yeah. Review wise, I can just read out that really awful review we got recently.
Did we? Do I know about that?
I swear I read it out like a couple weeks ago. It looks like we might have one more. No, the two stars for the moments of greatness one.
Yeah.
How about you being negative? Anyway, yeah. If you just like the podcast, head over to our iTunes page and leave a nice review. But if you don't like the podcast, just go roast us there and we'll read it out. Thanks so much for listening. Again, you can find us facebook.com/TheMitchinPodcast. The Mitchin, and then the email address is themitchinpodcast@gmail.com. Just look up Mitchin on Facebook, you'll find us. Mitch can be found at Instakrill on Instagram, Krillin on the Run on Twitter. I'm at Levdog, LEVDAWG on both. And I got two other podcasts. One's called Hey Fam, one's called Serious Issues.
You finally get to choose Song of the Week, bro.
Oh, man, I came prepared too. Unlike our other stupid guests who don't actually know that this is a new segment now. So I've been trying, I've got a lot of deadlines. I mean, I'm applying for some new stuff and handing in some old stuff. So doing a lot of late night writing. And what that basically means is I get really easily distracted and then go down incredible rabbit holes.
Mm-hmm.
And just this week I was like, I haven't found a weird new rap song that no one else is listening to in Sydney that I can just play out all the time. And so I found one. It's my favorite subgenre of hip-hop, which
did you tweet this one?
Yeah.
I didn't listen to it yet.
Rap songs about friendship.
Yeah.
This is a podcast about food, but first and foremost, it's about friendship.
Yeah.
So this song is by Creek Boys. This song is called With My Team. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Peace.
We're 11 to 10, too deep. Real niggas become real breeze. Thank God we ain't on no t-shirts. I'm high off, we don't do perks. Got a cool games, bitches wanna come through. Said she wanna fuck me and my whole crew. She don't give me no teeth when I say treat you. That pussy too sweet, I get sweet too. She'll tell to fuck me, it won't fuck you. That be the shit I like. Fuck me, bro.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.